Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and with me, as ever, are Caroline White, Deputy Editor, and Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. We're here to talk you through all the big news from the world of super yachting and hopefully offer a little insight along the way. Before we get started, this week's interviewee is none other than Captain Lee from the runaway reality hit Below Deck. He sat down with Holly, our senior digital writer and Below Deck uber fan, to talk about how he got involved in the show, some of his standout memories from all the seasons he's been involved, and what the future holds for Below Deck. So don't miss that. Stay tuned till the end. But first, let's talk Lego. Who saw Heeson's future flagship 80-meter Project Cosmos recreated in Lego?
I had a look at that this morning. I love it, especially the little Lego flowers on the deck. I'd forgotten about them, and they take me straight back to my childhood where my brother and I would spend every Sunday afternoon making these huge, huge contraptions and then breaking them down the next Sunday and starting all over again.
I love the little people, the choice of the people I thought was quite revealing. So I love the little Lego lady in the swimming pool and her little tiny swimming costume, and also the Lego man and his tiny Stetson, who I feel like was a sort of Lego oil magnate, perhaps the owner. I don't know. I thought it was quite cool.
Yeah, definitely. So this is the news that Heeson has collaborated with Dutch-Belgian TV show Lego Masters. And on the show, the two teams recreated 80-meter Project Cosmos. And the whole thing takes me back to my childhood too, and particularly these complex models. My dad would bring home, usually Star Wars, to be fair, Lego sets. And I just completely ignore the instructions and just start creating from my imagination. He'd go absolutely crazy demanding that I follow the instructions. I'd be like, yeah, whatever, Dad. But now I totally get it, because I buy my kids these complex Lego sets and they do not follow the instructions, and it drives me crazy. So sorry, Dad. But you can still vote. You can vote for the winner, whoever you thought did the best job of recreating Cosmos in Lego. I voted for Martin and Jos's model, and they used 12,000 Lego bricks to recreate the boat. Really, really special. And actually, there's a Dutch company. It's all about the Dutch and their Lego. There's a Dutch company who does it professionally, so you can get a model recreated of your yacht in Lego.
Yeah, it's a one-man band. It's a Dutch guy called Arjan Udevotter, and he's an AFOL, which is something I hadn't heard of until this feature, which means an adult fan of Lego. There's a big group of them. They have a special name. Anyway, what he creates is completely fantastic. And by day, he's a trained chemist and a bike mechanic, but he works on these incredible Lego models, often of super yachts at night. An average model takes him about 3 months to design and then another 1 to 2 months to actually build it. And when we're asking him about prices, these vary quite a lot, partly due to the size of your boat, but also because some colours of Lego brick are very rare, so they're more expensive. You can only use what is made by Lego. So if you've got a white yacht, great news, and not so good if you've got a teal one, because that colour Lego brick doesn't actually exist. So he's gathered a lot of interest right now, and he did an amazing model of Scout. It's really worth checking that out. That'll be up on our site in a couple of weeks' time. And I particularly love that he also made 25 little sets of the Scout boat with the bricks for other people to put together. And I just thought, who is giving those away? Like, is that a Christmas present for someone here? Have a tiny build-your-own Lego model of my super yacht. It's kind of amazing, but strange at the same time.
It's a brilliant Christmas present for the super yacht owner who's got everything, his boat in Lego. What's teal is a kind of a...
like a turquoise grey colour.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, I don't think many owners are going to have that problem, but, you know, it's something to consider before your next paint job. Can I make this in Lego to have on my desk? If the answer is no, maybe change a plan.
Well, if you're building a Reaver, that you might have a problem, because that's sort of, it's not quite teal, but it's more of a turquoise. I don't know, that might be a problem, brick.
Yeah, that really, like, deep mahogany colour.
Yeah, yeah. Or the kind of the Reaver turquoise that might be on.
Oh, yeah, the Reaver turquoise, that's right, yeah.
Well, you have to, don't ask me, I have to ask Arjan. I'm sure he can give you all the detail on the bricks. I also think a Lego brick is the most painful thing to stand on ever. If your kids are leaving them lying around and you tread on one, just agony.
Yeah, I can testify to that. Right, quiz time for you two.
We've just
recently updated on our website a story on the most expensive yachts for sale currently in the world. So, sorry to put you on the spot, but what do you think is the most expensive yacht for sale currently?
What's the penalty if we get this wrong? Do we get fired?
Immediate dismissal.
Oh, God. Listen okay. to us get fired live on air on the Boat Briefing podcast. I think I'll defer to Caroline.
God, don't. Well, that's even worse. Okay. I mean, I know that Luminosity is for sale and she is very big and very new. So I'd say she's a good contender for the most expensive yacht. Is that right?
It's not bad.
Oh, no.
She's second. So the most expensive yacht for sale is currently Octopus, the massive 126-metre Explorer formerly owned by Paul Allen, the late Paul Allen, who did some amazing things in her. So she's asking 295 million euros with Burgess and Fraser. And the Luminosity is second on the list. She's asking 225 million euros, again, with Burgess and Fraser. So there's some very expensive boats out there for sale currently. I heard there was quite a lot of interest in Octopus, so it'd be interesting to see if she's sold in the new year. We'll see. But Burgess have actually been making some news elsewhere because they've launched something called that they're calling the world's most luxurious sail. So after a mid charter season absolutely devastated by COVID, the company is really pushing the Caribbean season hard, and there are some big discounts on yachts. So the price for a week on 73-meter Lursen Titania has dropped from $540,000 a week to $405,000. 70-meter Fedship Joy has got a deal on too. She's down from $700,000 a week to $525,000 a week. That's quite a big discount. And one of Jack Cowan's boats is included in the sale as well. Jack obviously was interviewed on the podcast a few weeks ago by Charlotte. So his 44-meter yacht, Silver Dream, can now be had for $105,000 a week this winter in the Caribbean, down from 140.
It's kind of interesting. I'm just looking at those numbers. Obviously, those are large discounts. I wonder how they come up with the price of a charter. What is taken into account? Is it the price of the yacht? What the owner wants to make? I suppose it is its own little self-contained economy, but it's just the numbers are so big. I find it amazing. I just wonder how they work it out.
Broker know-how, institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
Market conditions.
Isn't it just whatever people are prepared to pay for it?
There's always that. Yeah. If someone's paying you $500,000 a week to charter your yacht, yeah, not bad at all. Talking about bargains, or you know, relative bargains. How about this? A classic 25-meter Fedship can be yours for just £95,000. I love this story. The boat's called Anahita 5. And when she was built, launched in 1952, she was Fedship's biggest ever boat. And we understand that she was the first Fedship to be imported into the US. And she's got a really colourful past. So one owner lived on her for 30 years. She was seized, the legend has it, by the US government as part of a drug running scheme between Mexico and California. So she was busted running drugs between the countries. And latterly, she wound up at a shipyard at a marine engineering company called Ferguson Marine in Glasgow in Scotland. So the company recently went into administration and the boat ended up a ward of the Scottish government, who is now selling her. So there you have it, a prime piece of Fedship history for just £95,000. That's probably the cheapest piece of Fedship history you can buy for £95,000. She does need some work, it's fair to say. But the pictures, she's just a lovely looking boat, real classic, elegant Fedship. So there you go. If you're looking for a project and you got some money to spend on a rebuild, Anahita 5, the buyer of the Scottish government.
Maybe that's what we'll get you for Christmas, G, as an office present.
Can we club together?
Or at least in Lego. Charlotte, talk us through the features you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, we've got a couple of new ones coming up. One was looking at how you can tweak your yacht if you want to spend more time on board. We know that since the pandemic, a lot of owners have been spending far more time on their yacht than they normally would do. So we spoke to some of them and to some designers too, and asked them what they really valued on board, anything they'd tweaked, that sort of thing. And I was expecting them to come back and say, oh, you know, get some really plush, comfy furnishings or an incredible master cabin, that sort of thing. But there were two things that really came up. One was entertainment. So good news for AV companies. If you're spending a lot of time on board, you're going to want a lot more cool stuff to do. And if you want a pointer on that, you can look at our cinemas special, which is out in January and has a really fantastic guide to everything from IMAXs to kind of little screens to have out on deck and watch a movie under the stars. But the other thing that came across was just the really simple need for a ton more storage, which sounds so basic. But if you don't already have it, it's not that easy to build it in. And one of the things also mentioned, it sort of got me thinking, are we seeing the rise of the super tender? Because they seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger every new boat we hear about. And some of the boats in this piece have got huge tenders attached. One of the designers we spoke to, Gregory Marshall, said, we're definitely seeing much bigger toys on board for going to more remote places. And if you want to do a 200-mile trip, you need a tender that can do that. The 82-metre he was talking about had an 18-metre tender, which seems quite big in relation to the scale of that boat.
Yeah, it's true. The super tender's definitely having a moment. So the Nord, the 142-metre Lursen that's due for delivery very shortly, she's got 16 tenders on board. 16, that's insane. So the coolest tender I ever experienced was, it was called U-21, and it was on the first Ulysses, 107-metre Ulysses, and she's now called Andromeda. So I had a good look around that boat with the skipper a couple of years ago when she was when she was owned by her first owner, Graham Hart, and he had this boat, U-21, before he had the 106-metre super yacht. So he had to make space on the big boat for the little boat. But U-21 was almost a super yacht in its own right. It was kind of 21 metres long. It was almost super yacht size anyway, but I had a ride of this thing. It was very cool, and you could go significant distances in this boat. It was a catamaran. So he built the new Ulysses, the 117-metre Ulysses, I think, and he put a big princess on it instead of U-21. So U-21 stayed with Andromeda and her new owner. But yeah, not a bad toy at all.
So talking about expedition yachts, I have a top tip from EOS, who I spoke to recently about what to take on a really serious trip. They said their number one tool is a Mark V Zodiac tender. It was designed for French commandos, and it lets you get on shore on a rocky shore, a reef, on anything. It's just the only tender you'll need. They said you can take any sort of fancy tender you want, but if you're going somewhere really remote, really tough, it's the only one you'll end up using.
Yeah, you could really smash those things about like a rental car.
a rental car you don't have to give back.
Yeah, gotta love that Zodiac. Good tip. Good tip from EOS.
Yeah, I would trust them if I was going on an expedition to get me there safely. So it sounds like a top tip. And another interesting story coming up in our March tech issue is all about the future of autonomous yachting. So I'm such a geek and I'm fascinated by this stuff. And the piece centres on one yacht in particular, which is the Mayflower. Not that Mayflower. This one is the MAS-400, which stands for Mayflower Autonomous Ship. It's crossing the Atlantic in April, and when it does, it will make history as one of the most comprehensive applications of artificial intelligence yet. Not only will it offer scientists a new, less expensive way to gather information, but altering the definition of captain in the process due to all the different systems it has on board. So it's a 15-metre solar-powered trimaran. It's built by Aluship in Gdansk, Poland, and outfitted in Plymouth in England, and it's going to be heading off to Plymouth in the States. And it's being built under the direction of ProMare, which is a non-profit marine research and exploration corporation. And it's got an incredible amount of kit on board. It's got 6 cameras, radar, sonar, AIS, GPS navigation programs, and weather monitoring, all feeding 15 onboard computers. There's an onboard captain, navigator, bosun, and engineer, and they're all computers that will stand watch, determine course and speed, monitor power, and conduct experiments. And the system is something that was actually introduced at our Life Under Sail event, if you were there in November, back in 2019, all those years ago. It's called OSCAR, and it's a collision avoidance system of night vision and colour cameras and an AI processor that can tie into a vessel's autopilot. So all that sounds super complicated. Here's an example of it in practice. It took 7,000 images to teach OSCAR what a buoy is. So considering that buoys come in so many shapes and sizes and colours, this system has to be kind of trained.
And we should also translate that buoy to our US listeners.
Buoy. Okay, so whether it's a buoy or a boy, OSCAR can identify that now in a split second, and it can then notify the skipper or initiate the evasion system if it feels that a buoy is in the vessel's path. And OSCAR now can recognise up to 55 million images, so everything from waves and birds to whales and rafts and beaches and rocks and floating logs, and the list goes on in its kind of enormous visual recognition database. And at the moment, the team say it's 90% accurate, which I don't know what you guys think about that. I would probably want slightly more than 90% because that's still sort of 10% likely to crash into something. But, you know, it's kind of good progress for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how accurate is a human in terms of spotting things like that. I'd be interested to know. Maybe a human is 80% accurate. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering whether it was like with driverless cars, where the stats sound quite scary, but actually they're, you know, not sort of at least comparable with humans driving them. But anyway, the main thing about the ship is I mentioned this to one of the guys at Necton, the Deep Ocean Research Institute, and he said they're still trying to work out a way to really make sense of all that data that we'll be gathering and make it useful. So obviously that's key and that needs to happen. But it's easy to see why there's so much interest in autonomous yachts, because for commercial vessels, the potential savings here are huge.
And does the feature kind of lay out any kind of timeline? Are we likely to see any AI integrated into the bridges or systems of commercial or leisure vessels anytime soon? Or is it a bit still a bit science fiction?
Well, I think it's on the horizon. You know, much like with driverless cars, the tech for these things is in process. And certainly it's worth watching this this journey of the Mayflower to see how it copes. I think probably the commercial vessels will be the first people sort of adapting this stuff. But it's certainly not that far off, for sure.
All righty. Well, look out for that in the March issue. It should be a fascinating read. Caroline, talk us through the headlines.
Yeah, Gulfcraft has launched its 53-metre flagship, the Majesty 175. It was launched at a ceremony that was attended by the owner in the UAE, and it is the biggest series composite yacht in the world, by which I mean it, that it's the first in a line of these models. Exterior and interior design comes from Cristiano Gatto, while naval architecture was penned by Yankee Delta Studio. The yacht has been 4 years in the making, and it's due to be delivered in March next year.
So I saw this in the very early stages of construction when I went out to see Gulfcraft a couple of years ago in pre-COVID times. And it's an exciting project for them because to date, basically, all their exteriors have been designed in-house. So they've brought in Cristiano Gatto, who's a supremely talented designer, to kind of remodel the look, I suppose, of their boats. And they're starting with this 175. And it's a good looking boat. I think he's done a good job. So it'll be really interesting to see, first of all, the price of the boat, because typically Gulfcraft's undercut European rivals. So there's some good value to be had there. And I just look forward to having a look around, because Gulfcraft generally have become a real player on the superyacht scene in recent years. The boats have been getting better and better. So this should be a really, really good quality boat.
Absolutely. So we'll keep an eye out for photos. I'm already harassing them for photos, frankly.
Very good. But
I'll keep on the case. Royal Houseman, in other news, has been commissioned to build what it describes as the world's largest true sports fish yacht. The towering 52-metre, which is named Project 406 at the moment, will have six decks. She will be designed inside and out by Frypack, made of aluminium, and it'll be a fast yacht. And that's about all we know at the moment.
So when I saw this news coming through, we had caught wind of it. But when I saw the news coming through, I got a bit excited, because a 52-metre sport fish boat, that's going to be something. So there were no pictures in the press release. There were some hand sketching pictures. So I emailed Barton Marnix from Frypack and said, come on, you got to send me some pictures. And Marnix sent me back exactly the same pictures that were in the press release. So they're keeping very, very, very tight-lipped about what this thing is going to look like. But, you know, Marnix and Bart of Frypack are very, very capable and very talented designers, as is the whole studio. So, again, you know, another really exciting project for them. And Royal Houseman, who seem to be on a bit of a roll at the moment. They've got some great boats in build.
Absolutely, they do. So moving on to Italy, Bonetti has revealed a 37-metre yacht model called the Moto Panfilo, which I'm probably mangling horribly. It's inspired by the 1960s and that sort of coastal lifestyle. The exterior design is by Francesco Strulia, and it's described as clean cut with what I suppose could be called quite a 1960s simplicity. The interior is by an Italian studio called Lazzarini Pickering, with lots of curving forms. So the saloon has a warm, light wood on the floors and sort of curved ceilings. And the cabin walls also follow the gentle curve of the hull. The whole thing feels quite 60s and cool.
That sounds like my kind of boat. I really like those kind of vaguely retro, old school, kind of glamorous, but quite casual. I love that stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah, totally agree. Also quite practical, so you don't bang into corners so much if everything's curved.
Yes, exactly. And then you can look cooler for longer.
Exactly.
Thanks, Caroline. All those stories can be seen on the boatinternational.com website. Meanwhile, Caroline, you've also had Raphael digging through data. What has he come up with for us this week?
Yes, so we've already mentioned the most notable launch of the week, which is Gulf Craft's flagship, the 53-metre Majesty 175. So we thought because that will be among the world's largest composite yachts, it would be a good time to look at composite yachts in general. There are currently 6,212 composite yachts afloat, super yachts, I should say. That's slightly more than half of the world's fleet of 24-metre plus yachts. 86% of composite yachts are part of or were originally intended to be part of a series. Two series popular enough for a special mention are the Mangusta 165 and the Westport 164. So the 13th Mangusta 165 is scheduled for spring 2021 and the 14th Westport 164 will be delivered soon too.
I just want to give one special mention as well to Westport's other series success story, the 112. So they're now building hull 65 of the Westport 112. So congrats, Westport. Great effort.
Absolutely. Well, the vast majority of composite yachts, that's 91%, are motor yachts. There are, however, some notable exceptions, especially among the larger composite yachts. So take, for example, the largest composite yacht afloat, the 78-metre sailing yacht M5 by Vosper Thornycraft, or the 67-metre sailing yacht Hetairos. In fact, when it comes to the 10 largest composite yachts, half are sailing yachts, and that's because this kind of construction can optimise performance. In this year's global order book of yachts in build or on order, 527, that's 64.2% of the total, are composite yachts. Of those, the vast majority, 292, are between 24 and 30 metres LOA. 179 are 30 to 40 metres, 49 are between 40 and 50 metres, and 7 only are between 50 and 70 metres. But I should say that that 7 is a pretty good number, considering how many are currently afloat. Mm. Some of these will be part of quite exciting new lines, like the Benetti Oasis 40 metre, of which 11 hulls have already been sold, or the Ferretti 1000, the first of which is scheduled for spring next year. San Lorenzo showed the first of its SX112 yachts at the Genoa Boat Show this year to great acclaim, and with its cool fold-out platforms and kind of fold-out bits, it shows some of the unusual forms that are possible in that medium.
Yeah, you can be a bit more adventurous, I suppose, in your exterior styling with composite boats, just because you can just create more complex forms more easily. That's interesting. So the largest composite boat in the world is M5, I should say. We recently featured on the cover of Boat International. And Hetairos too. Hetairos is a carbon boat, obviously. So the composite kind of spans GRP or traditional fiberglass construction and carbon construction too. That's what we call composite construction. And that's 62% of the global order books. There's 821 boats in build, according to our research, and 527 of them, or 64%, are composite yachts. So still, the super yacht fleet is majority composite.
Yeah, I think it's mostly in the smaller to mid-sizes. I think when you get larger, it tends to be metal, but it's still, you know, a substantial proportion of the market is those kind of boats. We don't talk about them that much, I have to say.
No, we don't. We kind of drift towards the big metal stuff, but let's not forget the bread and butter of super yachting are these composite yachts. Alrighty, I think that's it for all the data and news this week. Stay tuned for Holly Overton's interview with Captain Lee from Below Deck.
Captain Lee has been part of the series since, is it day one?
Day one,
and they've just aired season 8 this month. So I guess we'll just start at the very beginning. How did you get involved with the show?
By accident. I did not apply for the job. I didn't audition. I didn't do any of the normal things that one would think you'd do to get involved in a reality TV show. I was actually the captain on the boat that they chartered. And my boss had called me up. We were doing the Miami Boat Show. And he called me up and he says, "We got this network that wants to charter the boat for 8 weeks, and you don't even have to run it." So they've got their own captain, they've got their own crew, but you do have to go down and take the boat down to St. Martin, deliver it, and then just hang out down there for 8 weeks while they do the filming and go check on the boat about every third day. So you get a nice house on the beach, you get paid. I thought, this is good. I can live with that.
So what happened?
Well, for one reason or another, the captain that they hired couldn't fulfill his obligations when we got down there. So when we got down there, they were stuck. So somebody said, "Well, why don't we use the old guy?" They asked my boss, he said, "Well, how does Lee feel about, you know, possibly being on TV?" And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, he feels just fine about being on TV." Looked at him and they said, "Well, Lee, how do you feel about being on TV?" I looked at my boss and he looked at me and I got the message. I said, "I feel just fine about being on TV." So that's how it happened.
That's fantastic. It's so funny how you kind of almost fell into it. But obviously you were a captain way before Below Deck. Your career didn't start at season one.
I'd been a captain for 25 years at that point.
And how many boats do you have under your belt? What kind of sizes are we talking?
Like everybody else, I started out with smaller boats, 70, 80 footers. And then you gradually work your way up as you increase your scope of your license and got into super yachts.
What was the first super yacht you were on board? Do you remember?
I think it was Pauly D was the first one, and she was a little under 100 feet, and then it just graduated from there. Yacht owners either get out of yachting or they move up. Rarely do they ever make a lateral move or move down. It's got to be bigger. It's got to be better. It's got to be faster. But for them to go like, "Oh, I'm so tired of this 200 foot. I think I'll just go get a little 60 foot something or other." It's like, no, that's not happening.
So were you prepared for how big the show has become?
No, I don't think anybody could actually prepare for that. There's no manual out there that says, okay, when this happens, turn to page 46 and here's a detailed explanation on how you should deal with it. And you don't really realize the scope of it because we didn't know whether the show was going to be a hit or whether it was going to be a one and done. We had no clue. But after that first season where it just took off like a rocket, and it's been climbing ever since. So
were you ever worried about how it would be received in the yachting community?
Oh, I really didn't care. I'm just a captain doing his job. I don't consider myself a celebrity. I do my job. I run the boat the way I've always run a boat. That hasn't changed. I just happen to have cameras that follow me around watching me while I do it. I don't change anything. I haven't changed anything. I'm still the same hard ass I was 25 years ago.
It's a good approach, I think, to have as well.
Well, I think if you, especially with reality TV, if you're trying to make something happen or trying to project this persona that you think people feel you should have, if it doesn't happen organically, then it probably shouldn't happen at all. Otherwise, it's not real.
You would say the show is pretty realistic. It's not sort of, is it exaggerated for entertainment, or do we sort of see it on the screen as it happens?
Some of the guests will get that way. They will, I don't know what happens when cameras start rolling, what happens in somebody's mind. And it's like, okay, it's like you flipped a switch. Or Mr. Hyde was pretty good, but Dr. Jekyll's way out there. You know? And as soon as the cameras start rolling, they feel like they have to put forth this unique persona that is probably nothing like they are in real life.
Season 8 has also just began airing this month. Was filming impacted at all by COVID-19, or did you manage to escape it?
We got close to escaping it. We got close. Without tipping the hand too much, we did get affected towards the very end, but not in a devastating sort of way. Everybody stayed healthy. It was just a logistical issue that we ran into.
Is that something we might see unfold on the show? Is that a sneak peek?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very exciting. And of course, you have a life outside of the show. How do you spend your time when you're not on board?
Gosh. I do some boating on my own for fun, do some fishing, play a lot of golf. But most of my life has really gotten busier since I've been doing the show, because there's a lot of public appearances. There's a lot of post-production work that goes into the show that people never see. All you see is the end product. But it takes us a full 9 or 10 months to get an episode ready to air from the time we start rolling until the time the first one. In fact, we're still doing work on some of the later episodes now, even though it's airing. So the job really doesn't stop is when the camera is shut off.
You say you spend time fishing. Do you have a boat of your own?
No, but I have access to a lot of boats. And that's the best way to go boating, I think. Have somebody else's boat that you can use whenever you want to. Wash it off, make it pretty, and give it back to them.
You're obviously an incredibly experienced captain, and I'm sure you've got hundreds of stories in the bank. If you could pick out one, maybe the hairiest moment you've had at sea, what would it be?
One of the scariest, and I wrote about it in my book, and it was, I was doing a delivery with a delivery captain named Crazy George, who was appropriately named, and we were crossing from Hispaniola to Puerto Rico on the Dominican Republic side. And we're going through a stretch of water called the Mona Passage. And the Mona Passage is undoubtedly the worst, one of the worst stretches of water in the world. It's just, it's always nasty. It just kicks your butt. Every time I've crossed it, it kicks my butt. And we're out there in this small boat. It was only a 28-foot sailboat. And we're delivering it to Tortola from the Turks and Caicos Islands. So we're crossing the Mona Passage, and we get set upon by the biggest thunderstorm I've ever seen. And the seas were so big that you had to look up to see the sky. I mean, just walls of water. So I do my 4 hours on watch, and I go down and I roust George up. And I say, George, it's your watch. Well, he's not out there 10 minutes, and he comes back down. I said, George, we can't just flounder out here. He says, that's okay. He says, I took care of it. I said, what did you do? He took a 5-gallon bucket, stuffed it full of pillows, filled it with water, went up to the bow of the boat, threw it off the bow of the boat, and tied it to a cleat as a sea anchor to keep us turned into the waves. And we spent the next 22 hours bobbing up and down. Like, it was really tense. I thought, if I ever live through this, I'm going to kill George, which I probably should have, and saved the world a lot of trouble. But I didn't. But yeah, that was probably the most tense 20 some hours I'd spent at sea.
It sounds like hell.
we had green water coming over the deck. It was terrible.
Goodness. And any crazy requests that you've received captain?
You mean other than drugs and hookers?
Other than drugs and hookers.
Okay, yeah. I thought one of the most unique ones was my owner, his father-in-law, a major surgery, back surgery at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore in the dead of winter. And he wanted us to bring the boat up there, which was at that point in time, she was commissioned in 1985. And she was a 120-foot boat that would do cruise at 25 knots. So that's pretty remarkable for 1985. But the North Atlantic in the wintertime is really, really treacherous. It's just a nasty piece of water. And so here we are. Well, everybody else in the world is going south for warmer weather. Here we are going north in the middle of December. And I remember after we got there, we tried to give the boat a washdown, and she was an aluminum hulled boat, and the water would just freeze on the boat as soon as we started to spray it. So we couldn't even clean the boat after 4 days of running. And for New Year's Eve, he wanted to have his family with him while he was recovering, and he couldn't leave Baltimore. So we took the boat up there so they could spend time on it and get out of the hotel that they'd been living in for 2 months. And for New Year's Eve, it had been a family tradition to have this particular type of suckling pig from New Zealand. And so he asked me, he said, can you make this happen? I said, well, yeah, how much do you want to spend on this? Because I've got 4 days now before New Year's Eve, and New Zealand's a long way off. If I can even find this pig. So we managed to find the pig. We had to have it air freighted in, special delivery, special packaging. But we managed to get it there on time, so to make the family happy, so they could carry on their family tradition. That was kind of a unique experience. That was probably a $10,000 pig. you know, by the time you figured in the bills of lading and the air freight and, you know, of course, you had to grease customs and immigration or customs a little bit so you could get this pig in a hurry rather than go through the normal channels. And it's just unique.
No, incredibly unique. I bet you don't get that too often.
No, I had another one very similar to that. And it always seems to revolve around food for some reason. We had a chef on board that made eggplant parmesan that the boss just loved. And we're on our way down to Key West. And I have no idea. I went to every Publix in Fort Lauderdale and couldn't find one eggplant in the produce department. So I'm telling the boss, I says, I can't find it. He said, there's none in Fort Lauderdale. He said, there's not one eggplant in Fort Lauderdale. I said, not that I could find. Seven different stores for crying out loud. And he said, well, get on the phone. And I thought, you're kidding, right? He goes, no, I'm deadly serious. I said, get on the phone. He said, locate some eggplant. And he had his pilots. And mind you, he's got a G4 that can fly across the Atlantic, Gulfstream 4. And he says, I'll have the pilots on standby. He said, locate it. I'll have them go pick it up. Anytime you fire up that G4, it's like 10 grand. So we finally found a store in Key West that had it. And so we told them to hold it for us. I gave him a credit card and we bought the whole case of eggplant. So the pilots got a reprieve. They fly up to Tampa or to Orlando or something like that to get eggplant and then fly it back down there, all in time for lunch.
That's crazy.
It is. That's throwaway money.
Yeah, it's just another world.
It totally is. And you think there's that much money doesn't exist in the world until you go to the private airfields where you see 15 or 20 of these jets all lined up. But those are the people that own boats two at a time. Yeah, he had 165 footer, and he also had 120 footer and assorted small toys in between.
I'd expect nothing less.
Indeed.
So what's next for you and the show? Is season 9 on the horizon?
I sure hope so. I would think so. I don't think this will be our last season. At least I hope not. I wish I knew where we were going to film, but they won't tell me that. I can't keep a secret. Can you imagine that?
Outrageous. How dare they?
How dare they, indeed.
But you'd film typically over a winter season?
Yeah, usually we start filming in February. Now, the charter business has been great over this whole pandemic thing because people are using their boats more because it's very easily to isolate. Everybody gets a test. In some countries, you have to quarantine for a week before they'll let you, you know, move about. But once you get past that, go down to the dock, get on board. Everybody's been tested. And as soon as you cast off lines, really hard to catch COVID out in the middle of the ocean, if not damn near impossible.
Yeah, it's great to know that the charter industry hasn't completely died out. In fact, it's kind of thriving.
Yeah, it is. I have some friends that are charter brokers, and I say, how's things going? And they're just like, great, we're loving life. But good. And that's great overall for the industry in general. Like, you like to see that. I know that the shipyards around here in Fort Lauderdale, you can't get any work done because everybody's so backed up and so busy. All of the marine vendors and stuff are just, they're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just cranking. It hasn't really touched our industry.
So you're based out of a different port sort of every season, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite cruising grounds in the Caribbean or in fact the rest of the world that you think people should go out and see?
Oh, Tahiti. When we filmed in Tahiti, that was just, gosh, I love that. It was like stepping back in time. I'd wake up in the morning, grab my coffee, and go sit out on the bow of the boat because the Tahitians would be going by in their dugout outrigger canoes. And that's a huge part of their culture. And they actually have teams. That is their job, is to train every day. And they have these huge regattas. And they have major sponsors. I mean, Rolex sponsors a team, Heineken sponsors a team. And they pay these guys to go out and train and to race. Really remarkable. And they'll race from like Tahiti to Moorea and back, which is about 35 miles open ocean and nothing but manpower in these dugout outrigger canoes, 7-8 people just getting after it. And then they'll have this huge flotilla behind them just cheering them on. And it's really a big deal. It would rival the running of the bulls.
No, it must be a great little spectacle to see. What advice would you offer to people who want to get into yachts as crew?
Do it. It's a great career. You have to look at it as a career, as a job. There are a lot of perks that go along with it. I mean, the money's pretty good, and almost all of it's disposable income, especially if you're on a super yacht, because we pay for everything. We pay for your housing. We pay for your meals. We buy your toothbrush, your toothpaste, your shampoo, your conditioner. The only thing you really have to buy is your civilian clothes and your underwear. So if you're living on board, you don't have a house, you don't have a car, you could bank almost all of the money that you make if you wanted to. Unfortunately, some of our younger crew members it just burns a hole in them. Next thing you know, they're sporting $2,000 sunglasses and went out and bought a Rolex and get to the end of the season, go, where the hell did all that money go that I made?
That is something I did notice on the series when you first sort of are introduced to the crew of each season, their luggage, some nice luggage. They're flaunting.
Yeah. When the guests come on board, you'd be surprised. I'll probably never get a good comprehension of what prompts this, but we would make bets when the van would pull up as to how many pieces of luggage there would be for 6 or 8 people. And I mean, we've hit into the 20s to 24 pieces of luggage for 8 people for 3 days. And it's like, seriously, you're on a boat, on the water. But they get, I mean, they really get psyched up for it. They'll plan a theme party and they'll have a suitcase just full of stuff for their theme party. It's quite amusing.
I have one last question. This is something I was really interested to know. Who would be your dream charter guests, dead or alive?
Probably John Wayne. Yeah.
What's that?
He was a Hollywood icon. He was just a great patriot, just a great guy. And I'd love to just sit around and hear the stories that he could tell, given the opportunity.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Well, have a good rest of the day.
I will.
And
Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Boat Briefing. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.